Atta, therefore, tat, that, apavadartam, to counteract, bhaja, engage in devotional service, sarva atmana, with all your senses, harim, unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Pasyan, seeing, tat, of the Lord, atmakam, under the control, vishwam, the cosmic manifestation, stiti, maintenance, utpati, creation, apyaya, and annihilation, yata, from whom? Translation. You should always know that this cosmic manifestation is created, maintained, and annihilated by the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Consequently, everything within this cosmic manifestation is under the control of the Lord. To be enlightened by this perfect knowledge, one should always engage himself in the devotional service of the Lord. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Self-realization, understanding oneself as Brahman or spirit soul, is very difficult in the material condition. However, if we accept the devotional service of the Lord will gradually reveal Himself. In this way, the progressive devotee will gradually realize his spiritual position. We cannot see anything in the darkness of night, not even our own selves. But when there is sunshine, we can see not only the sun, but everything within the world as well. Lord Krishna explains in the 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, 7.1, "Now hear, O son of Pita, how by practicing yoga in full consciousness of me, with mind attached to me, you can know me in full, free from doubt." When we engage ourselves in the devotional service of the Lord to become Krishna conscious, we understand not only Krishna, but everything related to Krishna. In other words, through Krishna consciousness, we can understand our constitutional position. In Krishna consciousness, we can understand that the entire material creation is created by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, maintained by Him, annihilated by Him, and is absorbed in Him. We are also part and parcel of the Lord. Everything is under the control of the Lord, and therefore our only duty is to surrender unto the Supreme and engage in His transcendental loving service. Om Aganatana Mandas Aganatana Shalakaya Taksudamalitam Yena Tasma Shri Gurvenama Shri Shaitanya Manovistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakadavayata Dati Swapurantaka He Krishna Karina Sindhu Dina Bandhu Tigat Pate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Dhamasate Tapta Takanchana Gorange Radhe Vindavineshwade Vishibhanu Sute Devi Panamami Hari Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shivasati Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. You should always know that this cosmic manifestation is created, maintained, and annihilated by the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Consequently, everything within this cosmic manifestation is under the control of the Lord. To be enlightened by this perfect knowledge, one should always engage himself in the devotional service of the Lord. Srila Narada Muni, in his talks with King Pritinabarhi, is reaching his conclusion of a long discourse of revealed knowledge about the nature of the soul and how the subtle body creates the next body, and how the living entity is transmigrating from one body to another according to his desires, which fall into 8,400,000 varieties with their corresponding species of life. And now Narada Muni is explaining that to really understand, to actually realize this, we must surrender unto the will of the Lord. Simply understanding the Vedic knowledge is not sufficient to free oneself from the cycle of birth and death. Hiranyakashipu was very expert in presenting Vedic knowledge. And he even understood that he was not that body. But he did not have love for the Lord. He did not surrender willingly, lovingly, unto the will of the Lord. And therefore, his understanding was more theoretical than realized. He had not realized his actual self, his actual identity, his actual self-interest, and was liberated only by the mercy of the Lord, which was invoked by his great devotee son, Prahlad Maharaj. So, even today, when there is such a deficit of Vedic knowledge in the Western world, with the exception of Srila Prabhupada's books, which are ever being distributed for the enlightenment of this darkened Western region, even today, if you go to a mundane Karmi public library, you can find shelves of books explaining how you're not that body. It's really pretty elementary, basic, and even somewhat common knowledge. But no one can free themselves from the attachment to the body and from the transmigration of the body, from transmigration of the soul from one body to another, until he acquires realization, not only of what he's not, but what he is and what is his function. And that is not attained by some theoretical pursuit of knowledge. The realization comes by applying the knowledge, by rendering devotional service according to the will of the Lord. And the will of the Lord can only be understood by the servant of the Lord. Even in this world, if you want to approach some big personality or understand such a person, the best means is through that person's servant. The servant knows what the master wants and desires and likes and dislikes and what he's doing. And behind his, you know, public life, what's actually going on in his private life and what the actual person is really all about. So therefore, when Narada Muni was seeking out the Lord and actually attained darshan of Lord Chaitanya in Goloka, previously in Vaikuntha, later in Goloka, and in the series of dealings, it was revealed that Radha and Krishna would unite in a form which would teach devotional service. Because Krishna was thinking, I can't fulfill the desires of my servant, Narada, to teach devotional service unless I practice it myself. Devotional service is not something you can teach without practicing it. because the practice bestows the realization. And going back to our analogy of the Karmi libraries, you can read all kinds of books that'll theoretically and convincingly explain how you're not that body, but you won't get any realization, and the persons explaining such theoretical knowledge have no realization. Why? Because they're attached to sense gratification. And they can't free themselves without acquiring a higher taste. And, you know, here Narada Muni is giving so much elaborate information about the workings of the mind, but all we really need to understand is the mind is simply looking for pleasure. Its duty is to accept and reject. It's supposed to be under the guidance of the intelligence, which is supposed to be following the dictates of the soul, who is servant of the supersoul. But in the material world, because it's a reflection of the reality, everything is backwards, reversed, and upside down. So the conditioned soul follows the dictates of his senses, which dictate to the mind, which dictates to the intelligence, which dictates to the soul, which dictates to the supersoul. And when the supersoul gives his wise counsel and loving advice that, you know, you're going to suffer if you pursue that course, but sees that the jiva is insistent, Prabhupada explains that first there's conflict. The soul wants to exploit material nature. The supersoul is giving counsel. Please don't. You're going to suffer. So there's conflict at that stage. But the Lord will not impose his will. He freely and lovingly gives guidance and wise counsel. But if he sees that the jiva really wants to rebel and exploit, then, okay, you're on your own. I'm with you, but I'll be silent until you again call upon my guidance. So, to reverse the process from following the dictates of the senses to following the dictates of the Supreme, we have to redirect our consciousness to our actual welfare, which is also our pleasure. The mind is simply seeking pleasure. It accepts and rejects, which is its function, based on its understanding of what's pleasurable. But the conditioned soul thinks that exploiting material nature is pleasurable, and therefore it devises schemes to follow that course. But having once achieved a little taste of the nectar of devotion, and the mind understands that's not only where the pleasure is, but where your best interest is, in the fulfillment of all your desires, then the whole hierarchy becomes adjusted to follow the dictates of the Lord, and then one surrenders to the path of devotional service, which requires submission and guidance from those who have actual realization of the course and understanding of the Lord's will. And that's why the personal matter, the personal factor, the spiritual master, is the very crux of the matter of spiritual life. And that's why we're hearing in this chapter the instructions of Narada Muni giving to King Prachinabarhi. So Narada Muni, we know, has freedom to travel anywhere and everywhere in the material world, and also to enter the spiritual region at will. And it's explained in Chaitanya Mangal by Lochan Das Thakur how when Narada Muni saw the horrible conditions plaguing the earth due to the advent of the Kali Yuga, and he was seeing the grief of the sages, understanding the horrible onslaughts of misery which would inflict the people with unbearable sufferings as the age progressed in its degradation, the all-merciful Narada approached Lord Chaitanya, who was also revealing his form of Radha and Krishna, and agreed that he would descend to teach the path of devotional service by practicing it. This necessitates the appearance of Lord Gauranga, because Krishna, who is the object of devotional service, does not practice devotional service in that form. His form for practicing and teaching devotional service is the alternate feature of Radha and Krishna, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So then Lord Chaitanya began instructing, as Krishna began instructing in the realm of Madhurya, and Lord Chaitanya in the dimension of Audarya, their associates to begin arranging to take birth in the material world, to prepare and pave the way for the advent of the golden avatar. And everyone was overjoyed, thinking that they could take a journey to the material realm to uplift others. The merciful, compassionate preaching work of the Vaishnavas is an expression of their love for Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. And they were delighted at the prospect of entering the material creation with all its suffering just to bestow good fortune by divine instruction, according to the will of the Lord, who would then later come and accompany them. So as Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita explains it, using the analogy of the tree of devotional service, Madhavendra Puri, whose appearance day we are celebrating, was the root, the seed, the initial seed. Madhavendra Puri is, in Goloka Vrindavan, a desire tree who entered this world and planted in seed form the seed of the tree of devotional service, of which Lord Chaitanya considered himself to be the gardener, the caretaker. And Mahaprabhu himself repeatedly explained that Madhavendra Puri is the seed of the root of ecstatic love for Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada comments in that section of Chaitanya Charitamrita that in the Brahma Madhva Sampradaya, previous to the time of Madhavendra Puri, the worship was basically ritualistic, with hardly a trace of actual ecstatic love, which was introduced by Madhavendra Puri. And the concept of serving the Lord as lover was foreign to the Brahma Sampradaya, very prominent in the Nimbark Sampradaya, but foreign to the Brahma Sampradaya. And how one great acharya introduced something not taught by the previous acharyas is interesting to understand, because that necessitates divine intervention, which happened in the wanderings of Lord Nityananda, who appeared first to the guru of Madhavendra Puri, Lakshmipati Tirtha, in a dream, as if a dream. Actual darshan means revelation, but it came in the guise of a dream. Lakshmipati Tirtha, who is given to intensive dreams and interactions with Balaram in dreams, dreamt, apparently, that this cowherd boy came to him and said, "There's an ascetic, a very severe ascetic, wandering in this region. He will come to you tomorrow begging for diksha. So you initiate him with this mantra." And then Lord Balaram recited that mantra into the ear of Lakshmipati Tirtha, who in the morning, when Lord Nityananda, the Avadut, came to his hut, realizing this as the fulfillment of his dream. And when the boy asked, please give me that Diksha mantra. And Lord Nityananda was initiated by Lakshmipati Tirtha after giving him initiation the night before. Lord Nityananda, who knows well the desire of Lord Chaitanya and how to facilitate that, actually planted the initial seed in the heart of Lakshmipati Tirtha, which was not revealed until his disciple Madhavendra Puri. And then when Lord Nityananda met him in the forest, said, I've searched out the whole world and found nowhere actual pure love for Krishna, which plays in the heart of Madhavendra Puri. Lord Chaitanya and Nityananda Prabhu both repeatedly glorified Madhavendra Puri as the root cause of ecstatic love for Krishna, which manifests to the world in the form of uncovering Sri Gopal from under the weeds and the bushes of Braj, which is like the nature of the conditioned soul who's got Krishna in that holy dham of the heart, but he's covered by all the weeds of material desires and mental concoctions and conceptions, and requires divine intervention and guidance, which comes through the servants of the Lord to cut down those weeds and cleanse away that dirt and reveal the Lord in the heart. So before the advent of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, so many devotees took birth in Bharatvarsha and elsewhere during his Leela and afterwards. The second generation of Gaura Bhaktas had as a very prominent leader Srinivasacharya, who also took birth today, who was the son of Gangadhar Bhattacharya in Bengal, who was a devotee aware that Lord Chaitanya was revealing his pastimes in Nadia and longed to go there and have his darshan, but due to family and social pressures was not able. Until that lolium became so intensive that he didn't care about anything else and he left home to seek out the Lord. But on the way to Nadia, to Navadvip, while passing through Katwa and seeing huge crowds and excitement, what's going on? Sri Chaitanya has come here to take sannyas from the revered Keshava Bharati. And when Gangadhar Bhattacharya heard this news, he was like devastated. The supreme enjoyer is acting like conditioned soul, forfeiting the pleasure which is naturally his to pursue the harsh, difficult, tortuous life of an ascetic? Why? How can this be? But his grief was balanced by an intensive joy that Lord Chaitanya was in that town. So with conflicting emotions of grief and joy, approached the arena in Keshava Bharati's ashram just in time to see the barber having, like, I guess you'd call it a nervous breakdown. Everybody was just, even the knife was crying, what to speak of the barber and everybody else. But the Lord, no, how can I cut that, those beautiful locks of wavy hair, mother? Just do it. And it's like the Lord guided the barber's hand to cut his hair. But it was such a traumatic experience that that barber resigned from his profession and became a confectioner. Vowed then and there he would never again cut anybody's hair. It was such a... And then nobody could believe. But after his hair was cut and that golden moon-like form after bathing Ganges returning in saffron cloth was even more beautiful. And while everybody was still in shock and just kind of like traumatized, not really, they wanted to like revolt and protest and stop it, but they couldn't do it. The Lord was fully determined that he would follow the course of that Brahmin from Avanti in pursuit of the lotus feet of the Lord, which means devotional service. So when he came back, and everybody was mesmerized even more by his effulgent beauty, and Keshava Bharati gave him his sannyas name, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, which like reverberated through the audience, and especially had a dramatic effect on Gangadhar Bhattacharya, who, while his eyes were pleading with everyone to kind of give some explanation for what had just happened, was also so rapt in chanting that name, which he could not stop, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, that when he came back to his village, and all he could chant was Sri Krishna Chaitanya, he soon became renamed Chaitanya Das. And then when his wife and the townspeople and everybody saw the transformation in him, they all accompanied him as he again departed on his journey to seek out the Lord in Puri. So when Gangadhar Chaitanya Das now and his wife arrived in Jagannath Puri, they were greeted by Lord Chaitanya, who told them that Lord Jagannath is very happy that you have come. Now go see the lotus-eyed Lord Jagannath, which they did, accompanied by Sri Govinda, the Lord's personal servant. And then Govinda arranged nice residential quarters for them. And then when Govinda came back to Lord Chaitanya's room after accommodating Chaitanya Das and his wife, it was very interesting. Lord Chaitanya told them, Govinda, that they haven't revealed this to me, but they told Lord Jagannath that this couple is desiring a son. For so many years they've desired a son, but no offspring has come. They expressed that desire to Lord Jagannath, and I somehow understand it. And I want you to know, and you can inform them as well, that a son will come to fulfill their desire, and they should name him Srinivas. So when they had that, heard that news, and Lord Chaitanya said, I have revealed the Bhakti Shastras through the hearts and the writings of Rupa and Sanatan in Braj. Those Bhakti Shastras should be distributed throughout the world. And this will be the mission inaugurated by this great soul who is about to send Srinivasacharya. So in great joy, Chaitanya Das and his wife returned to their village and in due course of time gave birth to a son. And everyone, when he appeared, marveled at his moon-like face, his lotus eyes, in his long arms reaching down to his knees, in his golden effulgence, he looked just like Lord Chaitanya, and was in fact the incarnation of Lord Chaitanya's ecstasy, or ontologically Mani Manjari from Braj. So Lord Chaitanya at that time wrote to Rupa and Sanatan as well as Gopal Bhatta Goswami and even Gadadhar Pandit, told Gopal Bhatta Goswami that when he comes to you, give him initiation. Told Gadadhar Pandit, when he comes to you, instruct him in the Bhagavat. Instructed Rupa and Sanatan to teach him the Bhakti Shastras. So, Srinivasacharya excelled in all branches of learning, but when he reached his like teens, previous to that, all available time he would spend in the association of Narahari Sharkar, whose glories we sing in the Gaurartik. Narahari Hari Kori Chamara Dula. He would wave the chamra, But the unique feature of Narahari Sarkar is he was the only one, and it was due to his intensive, unstoppable, uncheckable, devotional love that he was allowed to sing the glories of Lord Gauranga in the Lord's presence, which nobody else could get away with. What to speak of, you know. So in Shrikanda, Srinivasacharya, as much time as he possibly could, was spent at the lotus feet of Narahari Sarkar hearing the glories and the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. And then at a certain point, Narahari Sarkar told him, you better go to Jagannath Puri. The Lord will not be staying in this world much longer. So, receiving that prophecy, Srinivasacharya sent out for Jagannath Puri. But just as he was reaching the outskirts of that holy dham, he heard the Brahmins singing a hymn of deep lamentation, how the world is now plunged into the depths of unprecedented darkness because Lord Gauranga has entered into the temple of Tota Gopinath, never to come out again. Lord Chaitanya left, just as Srinivasacharya had reached Jagannath Puri. The worst, absolute worst case scenario had come true, and he just collapsed, unconscious, and all he wanted to do was to give up his life. When Lord Chaitanya Nityananda appeared to him in a dream, he said, no, don't be discouraged, don't be dismayed, don't be cowed down or obstructed in the pursuit of your desired objective. Continue on your pilgrimage and take shelter of Gadadhar Pandit and learn the Srimad Bhagavatam from him. So by the inspiration of this dream, or as Bhaktivinoda repeatedly explains, under the guise of a dream, he was enlivened, although tormented by the, you know. Anyway, he went to Tota Gopinath temple where Gadadhar Pandit was the pujari. And the servants of Gadadhar Pandit were very amazed that Gadadhar, who had risen, he'd been like a ghost. You know, for years he'd practically, well, for days anyway, since the disappearance of Lord Chaitanya Nityananda, he hadn't been eating or sleeping or interacting with anyone. But then when he heard, when his servants told him Srinivas has come, he like came back to life. Although Srinivas was shocked to see how thin and pale he was, Gadadhar Pandit, I'm very happy to receive you as a guest because my Lord Gauranga instructed me to teach you the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is my delight and honor to do, but there's one problem. The manuscript had become totally illegible because Gadadhar Pandit would read the Srimad Bhagavatam to Lord Gauranga, and Lord Gauranga would also sometimes take and read, and the tears from their eyes, feeling the separation of Radha and Krishna, had washed the words off the pages. Now, this was before the days of book distributors where you just, you know, couldn't go to your godbrother, can I buy another Bhagavatam? The nearest Bhagavatam was back in Navadvip. So Gadadhar Pandit sent messenger to Navadvip, can you arrange a Bhagavatam? He said, yeah, there's one. They had a scribe copy it, and he said, you know, you can send somebody. So he sent Srinivasacharya to get the Bhagavatam, but Gadadhar Pandit warned him, you better hurry. The torment of pain due to absence of my lords, Gauranga and Nityananda Prabhu, is just unbearable. I can't stay much longer. So hurry back with that Srimad Bhagavatam. So, very quickly, he went to Navadvip and returned with the Srimad Bhagavatam, But he always lost time on the way because there were so many associates of Lord Chaitanya everywhere who gave him the feeling of the Lord's own presence that he never hurried quite as fast as he was advised to. He was always seeking out the association. But they were always, you know, reminding him also, hurry, don't waste any time. So when he returned to Jagannath Puri, he received that bitter news that Gadadhar Pandit had also just joined Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. So he was up once again, just fainted and wanted to give up his life and was so devastated. But Gadadhar Pandit appeared to him also in the guise of a dream and said, no, don't be discouraged. Rupa and Sanatan are still living in Braj. You can go learn from them. And then Srinivasacharya gradually came to understand that his learning Srimad Bhagavatam from Gadadhar Pandit meant understanding firsthand the message of the lesson of love and separation. So then he hurried to Vrindavan to seek out the shelter of Rupa and Sanatan, and Narahari Sharkar on the way also advised him, hurry, they're not going to be around for long. But he happened by Lord Gauranga's house in Navadvipa, where Vishnupriya and Vamsivadana and Ishan were still living, and he could not help spending a little time there, hearing firsthand their accounts of serving the Lord. But Narahari Sharkar warned him, Rupa and Sanatana are very soon going to join their Lord. So he proceeded, and on the way in Abhiram Thakur's village, Kanakul Krishnanagar, he saw Abhiram, who's the incarnation of, or the ontological Sridham, and had what some say was a whip, others say a bamboo rod, almost like a flute. And he would show his affection by hitting people. And to be struck by the rod of Abhiram Thakur was to receive Krishna Prem. But Abhiram was so ecstatic to meet Srinivasacharya, and the feeling was mutual, that he hit him again, and his ecstatic love just could not be contained within his body, and he hit him again, and then finally his wife had to stop him. If you instill too much Krishna Prem in him, and he becomes too much overwhelmed with, how is he going to preach? So she stopped him. And Abhiram Thakur blessed him to attain the shelter of Rupa and Sanatan, so he quickly hurried to Vrindavan, but Rupa and Sanatan had left. They too appeared to him in the guise of a dream and told him to take shelter of Gopal Bhatta Goswami and study the Srimad Bhagavatam and the other bhakti shastras under the guidance of Jiva Goswami. So Jiva Goswami met him just when he arrived and took him to his Radha Damodar temple, where Srinivasacharya offered his heartfelt and emotional prayers filled with tears to the samadhi of Rupa Goswami. And Gopal Bhatta Goswami later took him to Radharalan temple to receive the blessings of his deities, and then sent him to Jiva Goswami, where he met Narottam and Shyamananda Pandit, who had been studying there for some time under Jiva Goswami. And Jiva Goswami saw that now Mahaprabhu's plan is complete, that this divine trio is together in Braj, and remembered how Janavadevi had previously asked him on her pilgrimage there to send the books of the Goswamis to Bengal. In Bengal, everyone wholeheartedly embraced the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, but they didn't have any Shastric, you know, references for guidance, which is so essential. That's why Srila Prabhupada said his books would be the law books for the next 10,000 years. We need that foundation of Shastra. Otherwise, the speculations of the mind can just take us who knows where. So, at a grand initiation ceremony where Jiva Goswami, I mean, they all had their Diksha gurus, different Diksha gurus, but they were under the tutelage of Jiva Goswami. And when he announced that now Srinivas, who became Srinivas Acharya, and Duki Krishnadas, because of giving pleasure to Srimati Radharani, was officially then known as Shyamananda Pandit, and Narottam became Narottam Das Thakur. When Jiva Goswami announced that these boys will take the books of the Goswamis, their life works, to Navadvip, where there was a lot of scribes available to reproduce the books from by which they could be distributed, everyone in Vrindavan was so just immersed in great joy that the gift with which they were so blessed would be, this was the beginning of its distribution in the world. Because the symptom of love is you want to share. So Jiva Goswami had a very rich merchant disciple arrange for beautiful wagons with four beautiful strong oxen, two teamsters, and 10 armed guards. Understanding how precious these books were and how they could not take any chance that they'd be lost to the world. So as that party departed from Vrindavan, the devotees came from everywhere. They came from Govardhan, they came from Radhakund, and even the younger, like Jiva Goswami, who was very elderly actually at that time, accompanied them all the way to Mathura just to encourage these young boys in this divine mission of distributing the books. So the party went very smoothly through the forests and jungles of Jharkhand and through other, you know, regions that were, you know, at war with one another, and everything went really smooth. But they didn't know that in the region of Ban Vishnupur they were being watched and followed, because that was the kingdom ruled by Birambir Maharaj, who was a terrorist. Although he put on a good show of going to Bhagavatam class every morning and having his army of, you know, good Kshatriyas, but at night they became terrorists and dacoits. And he had his whole team of court astrologers who would give him information, confidential information of any wealth moving through his kingdom. And then, guided by that information, his courtiers, who became dacoits at night, would go rob those pilgrims or travelers or whoever they were and do away with them and bring the treasures back to the king. So they thought he was good because the taxes were just about where they should be, but he was being subsidized by his army of terrorists, which was not public knowledge, nor was it known that they were actually scrutinizingly watching the book party, because the astrologer had told the king that today your good fortune has excelled all limitations. Today, the most precious treasure, more valuable than jewels and gems,
the most precious treasure in all the universe is moving on the royal road through your kingdom. And there's only 3 kids, 2 teamsters, and only 10 armed guards. So the king got so excited, he told him, go get it. But then he said something he never said before, but don't kill anybody. He didn't know where that came from, and everybody was, why did he add that clause? He never told us that before. He was inconsistent with his usual instructions. So very obedient to the king, they kept watching, but they had to, you know, they couldn't just go in and massacre like they normally did, so they had to wait. But the problem was, these boys didn't sleep. Now they camp out at night, and then they just have bhajan all night. Then they'd have Mangalartik, and then they'd continue on. So they were watching them. 200 armed guards and terrorists who had all the neighboring kingdoms just totally subdued and controlled by fear, but they couldn't catch the boys. And, you know, they'd almost get an opportunity. Somebody would doze off, but they'd come back too. So they... But when the boys finally reached Bengal, they became much more peaceful because it was a very treacherous and difficult journey, but they didn't have any trouble whatsoever. When they reached Bengal, they thought their journey was almost complete. Everything went so smoothly, and they were so relieved that one night, after their bhajans, they fell asleep. And the instant they dozed off, the terrorists swooped in and made a very clean getaway with the treasure. Nobody even knew what happened until they woke up in the morning, and that was worse than the worst case scenario come real, because can you imagine? These boys were entrusted with the life works of these 6 or 8 Goswamis of Vrindavan. Their life work, their life mission in this world was entrusted to these boys. Some say it was the only manuscript. Some say that Jiva Goswami had another copy, but we're not really sure. And they were gone. You know, the oxen were there, and the wagons were there, but the trunks containing the books personally wrapped, and Jiva Goswami personally wrapping and packing and raising each book in a, over his head, this is the nectar of devotion, everybody. Like a big, and they were gone. The Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, everything was gone. The boys, their initial immediate impulse, they were camped on the bank of a kund, was to jump in and drown themselves. But Srinivasacharya was a little bit wiser in this regard, and he understood that how could Krishna, who empowered and sent his own servants to this world for the main principle, purpose of writing these books, allow them that they're just going to disappear like that? There's obviously some purpose to all this. And since he told his friends, this is my Prabhu Datta Desh, we're now in Bengal, so, you know, Shamananda, you can go back to Orissa, and Narottam to East Bengal. It's my duty, responsibility to retrieve the books. He had no idea where to start, but encouraged by his words, the other boys went out preaching, and he just, without any direction to pursue, but he saw on the horizon an effulgence. It wasn't like the sunrise or moonrise or anything. So he thought, this is like some... So he followed, and then he came to the house of one very saintly Brahmin, and he had Bhagavatam class there that morning. And the Brahmin, then he revealed his heart and his dilemma to the Brahmin. And the Brahmin said, well, I don't know what to tell you exactly, but this king, he's kind of two-faced, but the good thing about him is he does hear Bhagavatam every day. So why don't you go to Bhagavatam class at his palace, and that's also the direction where you saw that effulgence, so maybe something will come of it. That's the only advice I can give you. So the two of them went to Bhagavatam class in the king's palace the next day. And the court pundit
Vyasacharya was explaining the text according to his own speculation, and Srinivasacharya, you know, controlled himself for the first few days because he's not supposed to be a guest in the palace and then immediately challenge the court pundit for his presentation of the Bhagavatam. So he waited a few days until he just couldn't bear it anymore. And he stood up and said, "Why are you not following the commentaries of the acharyas, especially Sridhar Swami?" And the pundit was infuriated. He said, "You think you can explain it better?" He said, "Yes, I can." So the king was getting really intrigued by this whole interaction and beginning to think, well, maybe the Raj Pandit wasn't presenting things in the right way, and he was curious. So he said, "Yeah, you give class." So Srinivasacharya accepted the offer. And when he began singing the verses in his own unique melody with his, as Bhaktivinodkar explains it, it appeared as if the stone walls of the palace were melting. What to speak of the hearts of everyone hearing? And then the king approached him and said, "Who are you bringing so much love and wisdom into my kingdom? Who are you and where have you come from?" So he said, Srinivasacharya explained, "Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, combined form of Radha and Krishna, has empowered and dispatched his own intimate servants to this world to preach. And the Goswamis, under his inspiration, have written all these books. And I was entrusted by Jiva Goswami to deliver them to Bengal. But right here, in your kingdom, they have mysteriously somehow vanished." King said, "I'm your servant. How can I help? Help me get those books back." So what had happened, just like the night before, when the king was rummaging through all his treasures achieved by the dacoits that day, and they came with the big one that was predicted, the king dropped all the other gold and jewels and went very eagerly and very carefully, unwrapped the silk coverings, and opened the box to see what kind of treasure. Now, you know, in those days, they didn't have printing presses and nice paper. They wrote on palm leaves. So in great expectation to see the treasure, and he opened the chest, it leaves. What kind of treasure is this? So he picked up one of those leaves and saw the jeweled-like necklace of Rupa Goswami's signature. And then he was shocked. And just to double check, he looked a little, it was Rupa Goswami's own handwriting. And then he'd heard enough Bhagavatam to understand the consequences of Vaishnava Parad. So, oh no. Now all my thieving and it's all bearing fruit. This is beyond sinful activity, beyond sinful reaction. This is right in the realm of Vaishnava Parad. I'm finished. So he just closed it and went back to Bhagavatam class to meet Srinivasacharya. So when Srinivasacharya introduced himself, and then the king said, "Lowly worm as I am, crawling in this earth of birth and death, I'm the one who stole those books, and I have them right in my..." And Srinivasacharya, "Take me!" He took them. And when he opened the case, Srinivasacharya began worshiping those books. And the Srimad Bhagavatam, even though it was the first placed in the bottom of the trunk, had somehow risen to the top, because as we know, cream rises when the milk settles. So he took that book and touched it to his head after worshiping them. And then the king begged him for initiation, and he became Chaitanya Das too. And then the king said, "You know, I was so devastated by this whole
pastime, but now I see the bright side of it all, that now I have you as my guru. It actually was the greatest fortune. And well, you know, just skip over all that, but now we have a lot of service to do. Yes. So I said, get the scribes to copy the books, you know, give me passports so they can get into every kingdom. And the king, he organized his whole entourage to copy those books, gave passports, because, you know, all these different kingdoms, they were at war, and it was so difficult. He gave passports, they could go through, get through any toll booth or cross any barrier. And then the king, Chaitanya Das, he became such a Vaishnav. And even his descendants, what they would do is they dressed up as just, you know, regular devotees and go out and mingle in their kingdom and chant japa with everybody, because it became state law. If you don't chant japa, you can't stay in the kingdom. And animal slaughter was strictly prohibited. But there wasn't any punishment for breaking the law. It was a natural thing that if anybody didn't want to follow it, they'd just move out. They weren't happy or satisfied, which is, you know, sometimes people think, oh, why doesn't Krishna, I wish I'd just die and go back to Godhead. But if you're not pure in heart, you wouldn't be happy if you went back to Godhead. Krishna arranges this world so perfectly to purify us of all the anarthas that seek their sustenance in this miserable place, to make us want to go, to be happy in our original homeland. Anyway, then the books, and then, you know, he wrote, first of all, he wrote, you know, the Goswamis, because he had already written Jiva Goswami, the books were gone. Now he wrote, they've been not only retrieved, but he gave them all the good news. Everybody in Braj was in a totally festive mood, glorifying Srinivasacharya. And then the king, oh, I've got off the track. The king and his wife, they go out and chant japa with the devotees, just to make sure that people weren't holding, you know, bead bags and just, you know, mumbling or not chanting. They'd get real close to see if they were actually chanting, and if they weren't, hey, Prabhu, they'd encourage them. In this way, Ban Vishnupur, the terrorist region, became like the emporium of Vaishnav culture. And it had a special advantage because, you know, the Muslims at that time, you know, had most of the country pretty much held in terror. You know, there was always that fear in Vrindavan, and after Maharaj Prataparudra went to join his lord, then Puri actually was under nearly constant attack by the Patan soldiers and their enemies, and just total conflict and terrorism and persecution. But in Ban Vishnupur, the whole kingdom, there was no disturbance whatsoever. The king so nicely protected and facilitated all the devotees and the distribution of the books that everything just flourished. And even Navadvip under that time was under Mohammedan rule. So Ban Vishnupur became a new center of culture, Vaishnav culture, due to this apparent ordeal that Srinivasacharya and his associates had to. And all the people became God-fearing, humble, courteous, virtuous, loving associates of one another. But as time went on, Srinivasacharya, even though he tried so hard to conceal his divine ecstasies, one time in his meditation, he was worshiping Lord Gauranga, who was sitting on a jeweled throne, and he made such a nice garland and put it around the neck of the Lord. And the Lord took it off and put it around his neck, and it surprised him so much that he out of his samadhi, and he was wearing this garland, just filling the whole room with this fragrance, and everybody's, so he quickly took it and hid it. He didn't want to make a show of his tangible evidence of divine ecstasies. But on another day, when he was actually involved in the holy and the spiritual world,
And it got so exciting that it broke his meditation. He was all covered with different colors of dye. He couldn't hide it, so he became... Anyway, it's interesting that nobody has given an account of his disappearance. It's not something they just overlooked. He was just so beloved of all the Vaishnavas, they just couldn't even bear to write about it or talk about it. So interesting. You know, we say separation is the highest ecstasy, but here we find that the Vaishnavas omitted an important aspect, an important lila of the life of Srinivasacharya because they found it so painful. Well, how is the highest ecstasy so painful? This is something that's important to understand. Separation, vipralamba, is the highest ecstasy because it fosters, it nurtures, it enhances a deeper union with the beloved. Otherwise, it has no value or no meaning or significance. So what is the use of separation for its own sake? When one actually experiences feelings of separation, it means his own internal longing for association with the Lord and his devotees has become so intense that the external world just fades and loses all charm whatsoever, and then the internal darshan and relationship becomes the tangible reality. That's why we say it's the highest ecstasy. We thought that Srila Prabhupada leaving this world meant his movement. How would we ever survive? Talk about worst case scenario. When, you know, we never really accepted that Prabhupada was going to leave. Theoretically, yeah, but when the news hit and the world was traumatized, but actually here in New Vrindavan, at Prabhupada's palace that night when everybody approached with such heavy hearts, just like kind of holding one another up and everybody crying and just like, you know, mechanically going through the motions of kirtan. And all of a sudden, the whole mood was spontaneously and like, it was like uplifted. We didn't even want to admit, but it was undeniable that suddenly a joy, which we had never experienced before, totally obliterated the pain and anguish of the separation, that even devotees who had spent many years in Prabhupada's own association commented that they never experienced his presence in such a tangible form before. And as years go on, we see that the movement has not died along with Prabhupada's departure. The movement is still going on. The books are still being distributed. He's still with us. He's still in control. And he has given us practical realization of what was previously theoretical, that he reasons ill who tells that Vaishnavas die when they are living still and sound. The Vaishnavas die to live, and in their life they spread the holy name around. Die to live means let the false ego die and let your real identity as eternal servant of the servant of the servant live, and that lives on. Relationships which are fostered in party and joy do not become substantial. Relationships which pass the test of time and ordeal and remain service-centered, they develop a substance which even death cannot sever. And therefore we say about Srila Prabhupada, he lives forever in his instructions, his vani, and those who are his sincere followers live ever there with him. So we can think that now that great Mahabhagavat Senapati Bhakta has departed this world, we should go seek out some Mahabhagavat or something. But this ISKCON is a branch of Lord Chaitanya's tree of devotional service. There's other branches. You can go to another branch, but you won't get Prabhupada. We want Prabhupada because no one's so perfectly imbibed the mood and the will and the instructions of his spiritual master coming down from Lord Chaitanya as the most munificent welfare worker, our own beloved spiritual master, come in the line of Gaudiya Vaishnavas to continue and expand what was inaugurated by Srinivasacharya. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments? Yes.
The dreams that were seen by these great personalities, and like Gadadhar Parvati came in the dream of Srinivas. So sometimes, like, we materially conditioned people also have those, some kind of dreams. But should we take those dreams?
If we have dreams about the spiritual master or the devotees, the standard by which to evaluate is what instruction have we gleaned from that experience. If it's in line with Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, we can accept it as a tangible reality, and that can be confirmed even more if it manifests in our life as an increase in surrender. But dreams in and of themselves at face value can't be taken too seriously unless they are confirmed by Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, and in our own realization and surrender. If they're confirmed in that way, we can take it as a substantial reality. Yeah. When devotees pray for fulfillment of some desire, it's because they know it is the Lord's desire. And they're praying to the Lord to fulfill their desire to fulfill the Lord's desire. We can't just go do that. You know, I can't just go pray to give me a son without some confirmation that it's the Lord's desire. Otherwise, it's inappropriate. Two wagons. Now, another important episode which I omitted was when the three boys were in Braj. They would go regularly on parikrama with Raghava Pandit. And, you know, it wasn't like a sightseeing tour, because their parikrama was totally interspersed and enhanced with discourse on theology, ontology, morphology, and they'd actually enter into Krishna Lila and Chaitanya Lila, back into the present. And there's one touching episode when on Govardhan Hill they came upon this cave which had such a fragrance emanating from it that they all got intrigued and went in. And then it was light in that cave because there was a cowherd boy who was so effulgent. But he was so beautiful that everybody just like fainted when they came to. You know, who are you and what are you doing in this cave? And they were surprised at what he said. It was prophetic, but they had no understanding of what it meant at the time. There are many great dangers in this world. It's like, you know, kind of like threatening. But there's nothing we coward boys can't handle. And he disappeared. Now, what did that refer to? They figured it out later on. So, you know, Prabhupada liked to refer to Kartamashai, that deity is the boss. So we should have that faith that there's nothing the coward boys can't handle. And if we're their servants, then there's nothing to fear. Except forgetting that truth. Anything else?
Yes. Yeah, this thing was so simple, you know, so many simple activities. So how did he get such a good fortune in the disciple of Srinivasacharya? Is this because he heard how
that was part of the explanation. But understand, this is all Leela. I mean, Lord Chaitanya was orchestrating all of this, even orchestrating certain devotees to act as demons and everything else, just for the book distribution, really. So, but you know, you can appreciate any aspect of the Leela, you know, in so many multidimensional ways. One thing, when you consider that, you know, during the time of Chaitanya Leela, the whole universe was liberated. Not to Brahmajyoti, but at least to Vaikuntha, even those who were unfavorable, even those who were acting like demons and everything else, they attained at least Vaikuntha, which is otherwise nearly impossible to achieve. So in one sense, you know, what is the use of all this Leela preaching and book distribution when the whole universe was liberated anyway? And how glorious is it that these empowered personalities come and act like this when they're really nitya siddhas? Well, it all had some use in its own time, but it was really meant for an inspiration for the future generations. And in cases like of terribly demoniac persons like Birambir or Jagai Madhai, or big impersonalists like Prakasananda Saraswati, or very attached, not attached, but persons in very opulent settings like Raghunath Das with a wife more beautiful than an angel and millions at his disposal. It's really, I mean, what is the use when these are nitya siddhas in the whole universe? It's for our benefit to understand, to have hope and conviction and assurance that however fallen and addicted and sinful we may be, that path is there for us as well. So even though things may be very dark, devotees are never discouraged because they know the Lord's love and compassion and goodwill is infinite. And if we're simply surrendered to that, everything will be good.
I have just one more question. Like you were saying that Srinivasa Acharya went to all the different acharyas to take instructions, and many times they passed away before he came to Lord Chaitanya. They went to Lord Chaitanya. But these acharyas, they're very compassionate to preach Lord's message. So why did they leave?
Well, they preached before they left. They do their duty, and then when that's done, they go elsewhere to continue their service. Anyway, please forgive me for speaking in the presence of such great souls, Maharaj, and additions or comments. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.